The philosophy statement deals with what do I believe, or has to do with what I believe, to be true about life, family, work, environment, justice, and peace. Now, I know what the institution says we should believe, and there are just tons of books and publications all over that talks about what we could believe in. But the question is really aimed at me. I know that there's a lot of extrinsic stuff out there that I buy into it, and that's great, and I kind of go along with it. But what do I really believe about all that stuff, about life? For instance, human life can be studied and is studied on several levels: the biophysiological level, the emotional level, the psychosocial level, and the spiritual level. And the spiritual level, by the way, does not necessarily mean we're talking about religion. The difference between religious studies and spiritual studies is enough that they don't necessarily have to be the same thing. Think about it. Give it some thought. Human spirituality comes naturally since we come from God, and religion is something that has been comprised and set apart and set up by man to help them understand perhaps more their spiritual relationship with a higher power. That's life. So what do I believe to be true about life, if we can look at life on those different levels? And since the family, work, environment, justice, and peace, when you think about it, encompasses all of life, they're all related. So yesterday, people got together and we got in small groups and began to share what we actually believe. Then the mission, what is the purpose for being? None of us in this room had any control over being born. You had no say in that. Whether you like it or not, you're here. So now that we've gone through several parts of our journey on our path through life, and we are at an adult stage, the question is, what's my purpose for being? You know, why are you here? Why do you exist? You're here now. So what are you going to do about it? What is my purpose for being in light of my philosophy? So these were the questions we kind of dealt with, I would say, rather on a superficial level yesterday, but something, it wasn't designed to be in depth so much as just to start stimulating thought and getting you to think. And I had invited people to simply take those questions and deal with them for the period of time, not only the period of time that they're here, but to perhaps take the opportunity to probe those questions as they get on with their lives after Holden. Today, we're going to talk about where do I want to end up in this life, and how do I plan to get there. The sessions themselves that we're going to be covering really make up a taxonomy. In other words, it's an ordering of things, and you really do go through one before you get to the higher level. So in that sense, it becomes what we call a taxonomy. You really cannot have objectives as we define them unless we know what our goals are. You can't do steps and tasks if we don't know what the objectives are. And so you have goals. Goals find their antecedents and the purpose for being. And the purpose for being, which is the mission, is really the articulation of the dream or the ideal, which is your philosophy. So in that sense, it works this way. And all of this, by the way, in the context of the Gospels. So you have philosophy. And I suppose if I were to write this in a taxonomy format, philosophy would be down here. And you work your way up, but I'm going to do it in a pyramid. Then you have mission or purpose. Mission sounds so very big and institutional, and there's nothing wrong with that, but mission for the individual perhaps fits better when we use the word, what is my purpose? You know, what is William Braswell's purpose for being? It's not an easy question sometimes. And then goals. And we said that goals can be long range, and many of them are, and they can also be short range. So long and short range. And out of that comes objectives. And out of the objectives comes the supporting pieces of human activity, which are tasks. And steps. One is only valid in as much that it supports the other, and this supports this. So the steps and tasks that I do must be in support of my objectives in order for them to be really valid tasks and steps related to where I'm going. And my objectives should come out of the goals that I've set, and my goals should be really the operationalized activity of my purpose or mission. And that comes out and is the articulation of my dream. And all of this in light of the gospel. So, today we're going to deal with goals. If philosophy and mission is the where, or really the what, I'm all about. It asks the question, what am I all about? It's the what of my life. The goals represent the where I want to be of my life, and objectives with its accompanying task and steps is the how of my life. The following sessions that we have an instrument, those of you that are interested, we have an instrument that would help you perhaps be able to discern what your style is, how you can avoid stumbling blocks and dead ends in the maze of your journey, and perhaps really add some embellishment to how you're going to get there, perhaps make the journey easier. This does not presuppose in any way that you already don't know that, and that you already that you have never started your journey. It's only something to get you to think. The particular instrument that I'm talking about, for those that are interested, and I'm willing to do this in a time other than the scheduled series that are on, that would be on the bulletin board. The instrument I'm talking about is a Jungian instrument called the Myers-Briggs, and it is a personal preference inventory to help you understand what you like to do best, to put you in touch with your strengths. It is not a mental health measurement device. It does not psychoanalyze anybody, and it does not solve anybody's problems. It only takes what you tell and then respond to the instrument with. It tells you on the basis of your response what your style is and how you can best achieve things in your life. Since it is Jungian, it has a very strong relationship to religious thought and some of the theological reflections that actually come out of as a result of Jungian studies. To take the instrument would yield three things for you. It would tell you, A, what your style of operation is, your modus operandi, if you will, what your style of operation is in the world. It would tell you what your temperament is all about. It would tell you the best way, perhaps, that you could enhance and strengthen what you already have and how you can stretch and deal with that which you don't have. So if you're interested, at the end, I'll rip off a piece of ordinary yellow paper, put your name down, and then we'll have an announcement as to where we can do this in a separate group over and above what you're doing. You're not obligated in any way, and I don't put any limit on that. This is a one-time shot. I'm not going to say this to anybody else in the following sessions. This is it. If you're here, you're going to get it, and nobody else will get it. So, and like MTV, not everybody gets it.
Is it a number of hours? Or?
Oh, it's terribly in-depth. It's, no, it takes about, it would take about 35 minutes to actually do the instrument. It looks like a test, believe me, it is not. But the format, you know, there's a statement and there's a series of steps, and you pick one. And after you take that, then what my job is to interpret what your scores are. You score your own. I mean, I don't get involved with it anymore. You take it and you keep it. The only thing I ask back is give me back the question book, it's because they cost and I use them over again. But the answer format itself is yours to keep. My role then is to simply interpret what you got as a result of your responses, and then translate that into some ordinary, everyday, practical kinds of things that would help you understand why perhaps you get really antsy when somebody goes on and on and repeats stuff and the other person just loves it. Somebody would say, I'd like you to change this room. Okay, some of us might say, well, what do you want me to do with it? And I would say, well, make it a multi-purpose room and use earth tones and stuff like that and multimedia. And then the person would say, well, how do you want the ceiling? Where do you want the speakers? What color do you want? And when you know, how do you want me to wire this? Another person would say, great, I'll do it. So one has a global look and the other one needs the facts. It's interesting. I use it all the time in my ministry with families. It's very, very interesting. But in answer to your question, see what you started. In answer to your question, it takes about 30 minutes to take, 30 to 45 minutes to take. And as a result of that, we would probably have, it depends on what you want, we would probably have two, maybe at the most three sessions, subsequent sessions, because I think you need some time to think about it, talk about it, chew on it a little bit. Or if you want to do it all at once, that's great too. It's up to you, because I know there are other many wonderful activities that you may want to be involved in. So those of you that do sign up, let's talk. We can negotiate times and place, okay? So today we're going to talk about goals. Goals is the where. One of the things about looking at stuff like this written on boards or flashed on the board with an overhead projector or with a slide or even seeing a video is that there's a tendency, and we don't really know how to really project this when we start just using words, expository stuff or narrative stuff. It's all very linear. That's why perhaps seeing it in a story takes on more meaning for us. But the one thing about this is that goal setting really isn't something that we do out there to someone or for the organization. This all applies, by the way, to organization. If you don't believe it, check out the church. The church has a philosophy, has a mission, which is articulated in several missions. There are goals. Every parish has one. There are objectives, tasks, and steps. Those of us who've been involved in volunteer service in the church, those of us who've been involved in professional ministry, know all about this. We may hang other tags on them, but essentially it's the same thing. And all I'm saying is what applies to organizations, and organizations really are people. So what applies collectively to groups of people arranged and organized around human activity can apply to individuals. There's nothing really new about what I'm saying. And today I'd like to take a look at goals. And I'd like to look at goals not as something that we do out there, but goals designed in the context of personal leadership. Well, that word gets knocked around a lot. Personal leadership. In other words, I need to do something with myself and lead myself. Goals designed in the context of personal leadership. And since all that is in the line with strategic planning, in light of the Gospels, my leadership should be Christian-oriented and should have some relationship to what I believe to be true in light of the Gospels. The next thing about leadership, the next step is leadership too is not a hat that I wear and do out here. Leadership, rather than being something or a role that I do to myself, leadership as a way of being. Think about leadership as an existential way of being. In other words, you are the leader. You are leadership to yourself. Now the dictionary will give you many, many definitions for leadership. And there's a whole history. There's just tons of data, research data on leadership. And once again, I would like to suggest to you that leadership is not something that you do to others or lead others or a hat or a role that you wear. That leadership is your own existential way of being with self. And that leads me then to leadership defined. Then how do you define that? Leadership defined would be the initiation and maintenance of structure in my life. The initiation and maintenance of structure in my life. and interaction. In parentheses, I'm also going to write the word, don't know if it's in the dictionary, but it certainly follows that if we can have intrapersonal relationships, a relationship, if I can have an intrapersonal relationship to self, an internal relationship with self, examine the conscience, and the nation exercises, there is the examine, which causes me to take some time out on an ongoing basis to ask myself, where have I experienced God working in my life? Where have I experienced a chance to respond to what seems to be the promptings of the Holy Spirit? That's the examine. I can also have some intrapersonal communication about what I want to do. Do I want to go to the movie tonight, or do I want to stay home and watch Bill Cosby? That's interpersonal. That's not as heavy as the other, but that's the interpersonal kinds of stuff. Discernment is a kind of interpersonal exercise. It is responding. One must have discernment before decision, normally. So I'm going to write the word intra-action. So leadership then, stemming from a Christian context, as a way of being related to my goal-setting apparatus, is the initiation of structure in my life and expectation and interaction. Interaction also. Okay. Any questions? I seem like I'm doing an awful lot of lecturing today. I didn't want to do that. I want to get people involved in buzzing with one another and talking with one another and all that stuff. Any questions so far? Yes, when I'm moving right along, let me share with you some stuff on that. What does structure mean? Do not hand out. Structure means, it says, do not hand out. Understanding the ecology in a lot of handouts. Structure would really be defined perhaps, and I have about 7, 8 items here. Let me seriously read them to you. Structure means clarity as opposed to simplicity. Simplicity is really good, but perhaps when I try to initiate something in my life, I really need to have clarity. And sometimes the axiom, keep it simple, is not necessarily appropriate. But I need to be clear on what I want to do rather than making it simple. Sometimes making it simple all the time leads to simplistic ways of being, and that isn't necessarily appropriate in everything that we do in our life. So you want to be clear. Another thing about goal setting or leadership as a way of being, there probably should be an economy of effort to maintain control of where I want to go and what I want to do, and really minimize friction that takes the form of stress, interpersonal confrontations that are not necessary. Some interpersonal confrontations are very necessary, but to eliminate unnecessary stress and unnecessary aggressive confrontations. So in other words, to stay pretty much in charge, and to stay in charge, I have to be careful here, it does not necessarily mean that you do not, if you're not open to others, you're not moved by the Spirit, but to simply keep thinking in charge and feelings subordinate, and that doesn't mean suppress, but to always be rational about what you're doing and staying open to what you're doing. There will be times when your emotions will be on top, and that's okay, but for the most part, when you make a decision, be clear and be in charge of yourself. To be in charge means to move and respond proactively and to be intrinsic in your feelings about what you want to do rather than being extrinsically pulled by values and ideas outside of yourself, and you're just kind of following around because everybody does it. I mean, I don't know, everybody does it. Another part of structure is to have direction of vision towards the end product rather than the process. And why am I setting this goal anyway? And maybe to get there, everybody is doing it one way, maybe I don't need to do it that way. So to have some vision, to really know, what do I want to do? So obviously goal setting is not something we can just do overnight. Sometimes we have to really think about it. Maybe we need to pray on it. Maybe we need to talk to somebody else about it. Maybe we need to share it. But once all that stuff is in, And once you've had some chance to reflect and think about it, then be clear on what you want to do and do it. And remember, it's always in the context of your belief system or your philosophy. Decision making comes in here, and that means making decision making that focuses on the right issues, is action oriented, and is carried out at the least possible level of hassle. The least possible level of hassle. Just in parenting and raising children, that's your little child, that's so cute. Just really, that's the way to be. That kid's got it made. Sometimes it's just as easy to say yes than to say no. For people raising children who have school-aged children, children at home dependent on the family for support, dependent on the family community, not out on their own yet. Sometimes to get them involved early on so they can begin to become members of the community of the family and be involved in that at a very early age is a good way to carry out things at the lowest level of hassle. We need to be able to discern with children perhaps that which is annoying to us and that which is inappropriate. I always tell the story about mom and dad who went out to the store just before Christmas and bought their son a drum. Kid loves drums. I mean, he really could take knives and do a roll or a paradiddle. Never taught on the back of a pot. Well, why not give the kid a drum? I mean, it was just great. So they bought him a snare drum and a stand and a little pad to practice with. They should have just given him the pad. But they gave him the pad and the music and how to do it and all the different things. And they just loved it. So after Christmas is over with, Dad's laying on the couch, well, kind of in a quasi couch potato position, watching the Super Bowl game. And in comes Junior, he drags his drum and he starts banging that drum. And Dad says, Martha, will you get this damn kid out of here? I can't watch the game. Get out! And the poor child looks at Dad. It's his family room too, you know. He lives there. And he didn't ask for the drum, they gave it to him. And what's he doing wrong? He's not doing it in the living room. He's not bouncing on the coffee table. Certainly is not there in the middle of the street or in the driveway. So his head bowed low, knowing that he must be bad, he drags his drum out of the room. That happens. I just made that story, but that happens all the time. Dad could not discern the difference between what was annoying and what was wrong. And so the kid took the beating. It's the same thing. So I use it just as an example. And how does that relate to leadership and goal setting? I'll let you figure that out. But trust me, it does. It really does. Stability as opposed to rigidity. It is far, I think, more appropriate for us to have stability than to be so rigid that we really can't make changes or can't say, well, maybe I was in the wrong direction. Maybe I ought to change a little bit. Maybe I ought to listen. If I really want to know where I'm going to end up, I'm going to need a lot of that on my journey. I always use the analogy of the dandelion and the piece of chalk. A piece of chalk is a lot more harder than a dandelion. I could take a great big huge tractor and trailer truck and roll over a patch of dandelions, and where my 22 tires are sitting on the ground in this field of dandelions, no sun would come and very little water would seep in, and those dandelions would just be mashed down and you'd never see them again as long as the truck is there. The truck sits for 4 summers, no dandelions. One day, I get the truck started up, and I roll away, and guess what? Dandelions. Now, the piece of chalk, I roll that same truck over that piece of chalk, and what do you got? Stability as opposed to rigidity. Perpetuation and self-renewal, which requires my whole self to be able to look out and produce tomorrow's leaders from within. So if I have family or whoever I am, there's nobody lives in isolation. Salvation is not really a personal thing at all. We are really saved in community. I suppose that's true, otherwise Paul wouldn't have written that letter, that part to the Corinthians about the body of Christ. So we really are not saved in a vacuum. So what I do really speaks louder than what I say. And if I really want to get somewhere, let's hope that when I get there, I haven't stepped on toes, knocked out 4 people, wiped out several other things, and looked like a trail of a meteor going down the road somewhere. So perpetuation and self-renewal. What I do, what I believe in light of the gospel, should probably sometimes leave a trail of seeds behind. That's especially true if I have children, because more is caught in the home than is ever taught. So that's the structure that I need in my life in order to get going, and that's how I lead myself. And if I do that, then my goals become clear. Not always readily available, but when they come, they're clear. Expectation. I really need to know how to deal with those people around me and how to deal with myself. And this is the subject of subsequent sessions under this series. Let me just quote from my paper on this real quick. When I'm in a leadership role for myself, then I am leader and follower of my own thoughts and of my own choice of behavior. And so as follower, I have very clear expectations of what I must do. And I have a value system in front of me that tells me how I am to act. So I'm very, very clear on what I must do, and I'm very, very clear on how I must act. I need to be clear in my communications with others around me, since I don't live in a vacuum. And others need to kind of know where I'm coming from also. So expectation is best realized when there seems to be a balance between what my needs are and what my roles are in the various communities and publics that I live in. And then inter and intra-action, up-front clear communication. One of the sessions deals with a communications exercise, and if you get a chance to come to that, I think you really will have fun. We'll learn the difference between inference and objective behavior in communication. Inference and objective communication. Listening for the facts rather than trying to put an interpretation of what we think is going on. So that's what goal setting is all about. Any questions? Any thoughts?
Is there an upper limit of how many goals you should set, or is there a single goal, or is it multifaceted?
Well, good question, really, and I'm glad you asked that. There may be several goals which we might call terminal, which may be short range. There really are steps to a goal which is lasting, a lifelong goal. And so there may be many goals, but if goals are looked at as really, and I don't think I really defined goal clearly when I started this out, a goal is where I want to be at any one given time, then I think that for the most part, the accomplishment of one goal may open the door to other achievable goals. So the answer to your question is it really depends on the individual. I don't know that any one person can achieve more than perhaps two or three real goals. Most of the times the stuff that we call goals are pieces of human activity that would be objectives. For instance, let me see if I can piggyback on your question and throw a question out to the group and allow you some time maybe just to turn to somebody around you and think about it for a minute and spend about 10 minutes with this. What is today's date? The 31st of July, 1990. Take about 60 seconds just to quietly reflect to yourself, inside yourself, where do I want to be with my life on the 31st of July, 1991? Where do I want to be with my life on the 31st of July, 1991? 1 year from now. 9 years from the 21st century. And once you've reflected on that, just turn to someone, anyone, makes no difference. Maybe three of you might want to get together. And be a listener. Let somebody start with the talk and let them tell you what they think they would like to do. You don't have to share if you don't want to, or you can just be quiet and say, well, I didn't want to do this. If you do share, just kind of give out the information where you want to be a year from today. Then when you're done, the other person will do the same thing. If you're not sure, the only questions would be questions of clarity. This is not a test to see who's got the best, and there are no put downs. And if a person says, I want to be out on a raft in the middle of Lake Chelan, eating bananas and fishing, That may not be where you are, but that's where that person is. Respect that. Okay? So take a minute to ask yourself the question, where do I want to be? July 31st, 1991. Share with somebody next to you. Let's do that for about 10 minutes. And really, just do it. And perhaps some of you have already thought about that. Maybe not in the same words that I'm using, but certainly you've given that some thought. But stay with it. It's a marvelous, marvelous feeling when at the end of a year, you look back and say, I did it. You know, I really did it. Nothing breeds success like success. Of course, the issue around all of this is how do I function and how do I operate in light of the gospel? In one of the gospels, there's really one gospel, but there are four writers, and they each give us a glimpse or a perspective on this itinerant young carpenter out of Nazareth. But it's interesting because there are the four versions of the gospel, three of them pretty much parallel. You can lay them out, they're rather synoptic. The other one is rather mystical, probably developed out of a school of thought in the early school of theology started by John. He was quite a mystic himself. Set on the island of Patmos playing with his pet partridge, getting the revelation. That must have been something. Anyway, one of those gospel accounts, John is very much into the word of God, first 18 verses, and the word becoming flesh and dwelling among us. And there's a whole series of incidents. The lady at the well, the guy that was made who could see, and everybody was afraid to say anything because the Pharisees would kick him out. And even that last tacked on chapter about feeding sheep and lambs and do you love me? So John's gospel is one of mysticism, children of light, and love. So maybe one of the gospel contexts that we might want to think about is, can we indeed do our goal achievement in the light? Something to think about. That I thought maybe last night that reflection that Bill made on in the light is a good one to think about. The biggie for Matthew, of course, there's a lot of neat stuff in Matthew, but maybe does the accomplishment of my goal bring out the fact that I really am the salt of the earth and that I don't have to hide my lamp under a basket? Maybe I really can be on a hill with my light. And above all, yeah, maybe the Beatitudes have something to do with all this. I don't know, being a peacemaker. Being poor in spirit. Matthew's pretty much looking out for the establishment, so he says poor in spirit. Luke says poor, period. Poor, blessed are the poor. Luke, very, very interesting. Does or will indeed my soul magnify the Lord in the accomplishment of my goal? That first chapter of Luke is loaded with all kinds of stuff. Mary and Zechariah, a whole bunch of things are said in that verse. In those first opening chapters. Or perhaps in my quest for my goal and moving along and finding out where I want to be in my life, will you too also experience the Spirit of the Lord coming upon you? So it's kind of interesting. Jesus quotes from the old prophet Isaiah when he says that. Mark's the shortest one, spiffy and to the point. Can I do all of this in the framework that knowing Jesus indeed is the Son of God? Now, this is not a lecture on religious education or theology, but since we're talking about the Gospels and they are legitimate pieces of literary writings which hold greater meaning than a lot of other literary stuff, thought I'd just draw some thematic ideas from that. I wrote a little box. You know, if you're into computers, you can get a little window, a prompt window in the corner there. I wrote a little box. Be careful, because sometimes I think definitions get lost. And so to do what we're talking about, goals come out of a philosophy and mission. And one cannot do a goal. That sounds like a contradiction. Well, you really can't. You really can't do a goal. A goal is where you want to end up in a given time frame. A goal is the operationalization of one's purpose into action planning. So you don't do goals. What you do is you do objectives. You do tasks, and you do steps, all in support of the goal. Objectives, tasks, and steps are actual pieces of human activity with a beginning and an ending, and are all measurable. Once you've done all that, then you may end up where you want to be, and that is the accomplishment of a goal. I have a sign-up sheet for those who would like to sign up for Myers-Briggs. I think the session probably will run 2.5 hours. That's more than enough time. Get through the whole thing and do it once if you want to, unless you want to do something different or you want more time, and your time here will allow you to do that. But I do have a sign-up sheet for those who are interested. Since goals deal with where we want to be, I'd like to repeat something that I read yesterday. And there's a song of my awareness. My reading comes from a book written by Edward Hayes. He's written several books, and he's a favorite of mine. This particular book that he wrote is called Prayer for a Planetary Pilgrim. And in here, he writes a psalm called the Psalm of My Awareness. So if a goal is where I want to be, the psalm here seems to be appropriate. The question, where have I come from, raises up and haunts me. Lingering, it floats like a flower in the backwaters of my mind. From somewhere deeper than I know, in the place where I am held to the divine breast, the voice of God echoes in reply, "You, my beloved little one, were hidden in my heart before your sun burned bright. You were the dream of my delight before the earth was born, of the dust of long dead stars. Before I shaped a single star, I nursed you for endless ages, feeding you with the essence of my life. In my great lap, I played with your infinite childlike form and gazed with love upon your original face, the mirror form of my own image. I laughed with delight at the marvel of your being, the flesh of my flesh and bone of my bone. And you laughed with glee as I winked, as the forewind sprang to life and suns like dandelions lit up the dark lawn of space. Where did you come from, oh my child? You in whom live all my hopes and loves, you come from me." So if the goal then is telling me the where I want to be, the where I want to be is good in light of where I come from. And if we buy into what John has to say in his writings, we're coming from God and perhaps hopefully going back home for the first time. And that's it.